The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, today we're going to do something a little different. We've been doing that a lot lately with the coronavirus crisis and everything. Last week, we had gone over how to eat greens, the dangers in greens, how important they were to your diet. On the other hand, you also have to be very careful about where you get them and what happens to them, how they're packaged and everything. But there were several items that I wasn't able to finish because of the time. So I'm going to go over those real quick right now. And it don't take but a couple minutes, then we'll get into the Reader's Digest. By the way, if ever you feel like you've missed something, like for instance you missed last week, you can go to our website, ncreadingservice.org, and pull up podcasts. And you'll find the listing of all the recorded programs that are take place. For instance, I'm recording this program, even though it's going to be played on the 25th of August. I'm reporting it on the, recording it on the 1st of August. So they're available for listening all the way back into 2012, I believe. I started in April of 2013. So if you ever feel like you're mixed something and you're listening to this on your computer, you can obviously go back on the website and find what you've missed. How risky are greens versus other foods? 1 in 6 Americans is sickened every year by something they ate, according to estimates by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In 2019, officials from the CDC, Food and Drug Administration, and Department of Agriculture released a report that identified various foods involved in outbreaks in 2017, the most recent year available, involving 4 major types of foodborne bacteria, E. coli 0157, Campylobacter, Listeria, and Salmonella. As the charts below show, which I will describe, vegetables grown in rows and greens were the primary offender for illnesses due to E. coli 057, and leafy greens were responsible for the vast majority of those outbreaks. Chicken was responsible for the most Campylobacter infections, dairy products for the most Listeria infections, and seeded vegetables for the most Salmonella infections. But leafy greens still show up in a significant percentage of illnesses caused by these 3 bacteria as well. E. coli 0157. 48.3% comes from vegetable row crops, 25.8% from beef, 13% from other food, 6.5% from dairy, and 5.1% from fruits. Salmonella, on the other hand, 17.2% comes from seeded vegetables, 14% from chicken, 11.6% from fruits, 52% from other foods, and only 5.1% from vegetable row crops. Listeria monocytogenes, 48.4% from dairy, 29.3% from fruits, 11.8% from vegetable row crops, 6.4% from sprouts, and 4.1% from other foods. Campylobacter, 47.8% from chicken, 23.3% from other foods, 15% from seafood, 9.8% from turkey, and 4.1% from vegetable seed crops. So if you avoid the vegetable seed crops, the only thing you got to worry about is coli 0157. How to shop the lettuce labels. In reviewing labels on packaged greens, we found a variety of claims, but not all of them are as good as they sound. The government requires that labels be truthful and not misleading, but it doesn't have regulated definitions for many of the claims, says Charlotte Vallejos, Senior Policy Analysis in Food Safety and Nutrition at CR. Here's a primer on the claims we come across most frequently. Regulated claims. Country of origin. Perishable produce, including greens, must be labeled with the country where it was grown. USDA organic. To carry this label, greens must have been produced on a certified farm that follows defined organic procedures such as not using synthetic fertilizer or most synthetic pesticides. Nutrition facts label. The FDA doesn't require nutrition labeling on greens unless the packaging makes a claim about nutrients. So if your spinach is stamped with good source of potassium, it must carry a complete nutrition facts label. Excellent source of/ high in. A serving of the food must contain at least 20% of the daily requirement of that particular nutrient. Good source of. One serving must have between 10 and 19% of the daily dose of the named nutrient. Fresh. According to the FDA, this term means that the food is now in its raw state and has not been frozen or subjected to any form of thermal processing or any form of preservation. However, the term doesn't address when the greens were harvested, and those that washed in a mild chlorine solution can be labeled fresh. Unregulated claims. Washed, triple washed, ready to eat. The Food and Drug Administration doesn't require greens to be washed, but most, even unpackaged ones, get a rinse. A washing claim may mean that greens are gritty, but it doesn't ensure that they're bacteria-free, as we talked about in the article earlier. Pesticide-free. There's a lot of potential for ambiguity when this claim. Does it mean that no pesticides were used in the production of the greens, or that there is no pesticide residue remaining on greens that were produced with the use of chemicals? There's no real way to know if you want greens grown without harmful pesticides. Opt for those labeled USDA organic. Date harvested in a region where grown. The FDA suggests that growers of romaine lettuce label their product with this information so that lettuce can be more easily traced in the case of an outbreak. But this is voluntary. It doesn't apply to all leafy greens. Hydroponically grown, hydroponic. Generally speaking, this means that the greens are grown in a greenhouse using a nutrient solution instead of soil. But no federal government agency regulates the term. Non-GMO. This claim may be true, but it's not all that meaningful. There are no genetically modified greens, including lettuce, spinach, and kale, on the market, so no green is GMO. That's interesting. Didn't know that. No preservatives free from artificial ingredients. Most fresh produce doesn't have preservatives or artificial ingredients, so the claim may be true, but it doesn't set the label product apart from the other ones. And the last part of this article, the safest way to eat your salad. Even though leafy greens appear to make more people sick than many other foods do, some experts point out that the overall chances of them causing food poisoning are still extremely low. There's generally a high level of safety around these food items, so we don't want our consumers to view these outbreaks as a reason not to eat fresh fruits and vegetables, says Matthew Wise at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. But the fact is, consumers are increasingly wary. Carolyn Graham's experience has put her off greens. I'm now afraid to eat salad, she says, and many Americans agree in CR's poll. 25% of those who were aware of the 2018 outbreaks said they eat lettuce less often now than before. CR's expert offered these steps to improve the safety of the greens you eat until the industry can make greens less risky. Cook your greens until wilted. This will kill harmful bacteria, but a solution only for sturdier greens such as spinach, kale, collards, or Swiss chard. It's especially important for people who are likely to be seriously affected by food anointing, the elderly, young children, pregnant women, and those with compromised immune systems. These people may want to consider not eating raw leafy greens at all, says James E. Rogers, CR's Director of Food Safety Research. Consider buying whole head lettuce. Even though the data show that whole heads of lettuce not labeled washed don't necessarily have lower bacteria levels than packaged greens, their inner leaves aren't exposed to as many sources of contamination and are not handled as much as greens that are bagged, which further reduces the opportunities for contamination. Keep packaged lettuce cold and eat it soon. As you would with meat and poultry, don't let bagged lettuce stay out of the fridge for too long, because bacteria multiply at room temperature, Roger says. In addition, the longer lettuce sits in bags or containers, the more opportunity bacteria have to grow. So buy packages with expiration dates as far in the future as possible, and don't buy more than you can eat in a few days. If even a few leaves look damaged, slimy, or bruised, don't eat any of the greens in that package. Consider buying hydroponic or greenhouse-grown greens. These are less likely to be contaminated by bacteria from animal droppings in soil or water, although they're not risk-free. Their cleanliness depends on the source of the water and whether the proper food safety practices are followed by people who handle the greens, Rogers says. Soak your greens in vinegar. Microbiologist Carl Custer, who spent his career at the Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service, says research shows that soaking greens in vinegar or a vinegar water solution will reduce bacteria levels but won't kill all bacteria. Still, he advises dousing your greens with white vinegar and letting them sit for 10 minutes, then rinsing your greens. Maybe a little vinegar irritation, but most salad dressings contain vinegar anyway. Salad rinses are often designed to clean greens of dirt or chemicals, not bacteria, and are unlikely to kill harmful bacteria. Stay informed. The Food and Drug Administration and the Department of Agriculture, which regulates meat, poultry, eggs, and some seafood, post outbreak information on Twitter. You can follow them at FDA Food and at USDA Food Safety. On both agency websites, you can also sign up for email alerts. Report any suspected food poisoning. If you think you got sick from food, contact your local health department and ask to speak with the environmental health specialist or sanitation. You can also contact the FDA or USDA directly. For more information, go to cr.org/foodpoisoning0320. And with that, let's change the mood entirely. Go from serious to the best jokes from A to Z. What's your favorite joke? That's a tough question. With so many to choose from. For example, there are the thinking person's joke that take a second, such as a Roman legionnaire walks into a bar, holds up two fingers, and says, five beers, please. Then there are the non-thinking person's joke, like the ones dads tell. You're American when you go into the bathroom, and you're an American when you come out. But oh, what are you while you're in there? European. That's terrible. We've surfed the internet, scoured joke books, and sat through hours of Uncle Ned's sharing of his choicest yucks to bring in the best gag, at least the ones we can run in Reader's Digest. See if you agree. And these are alphabetical. A, animals. And there's a picture of three men sitting at a bar, one of them giving the third one a super look because he has his shirt open with a Superman shirt underneath it, and a blonde bartender rolling her eyes. A man is standing on the curb preparing to cross the street. As soon as he steps down into the pavement, a car comes screeching toward him. The pedestrian picks up speed, but so does the car. The man turns around and hurries back to the sidewalk, but the car changes lanes and heads directly for him. The petrified pedestrian freezes in the middle of the intersection. The car closes in on him, and at the last part of a second, screeches to a halt. The driver's side window rolls down, revealing a squirrel behind the wheel. See? Stares the squirrel. It's not so easy, is it? Terrible. Terrible. I got a feeling these are all going to be pretty awful. And this is the reference to the individuals in the bar. A man walks into a rooftop bar and takes a seat. What are you drinking? Asks the guy next to him. Magic beer, the guy replies. Oh, yeah? What's so magical about it? Watch. The guy swigs some beer, walks over and dives off the roof, flies around the building, and then returns to his seat with a triumphant smile. Amazing, the first man says. Let me try some of that. He grabs the beer, quaffs it down, and leaps off the roof and plummets 15 stories to the sidewalk. The bartender shakes his head. You know, you're really a nasty when you're drunk, Superman. Blondes. A ventriloquist is forming with his dummy on his lap. He's telling a dumb blonde joke when a young platinum-haired beauty jumps to her feet. What gives you the right to stereotype blondes that way, she demands. What does hair color have to do with my worth as a human being? Flustered, the ventriloquist begins to stammer out an apology. You keep out of this, she yells. I'm talking to that little jerk on your knee. Hope no blondes are insulted by that one. C. Chickens crossing the road. Why did the chicken cross the road? CIA. Give us 5 minutes with the chicken and we'll find out. Criminals. A new prisoner is in his cell when a voice from across the cell block cries out, 22! Suddenly all the prisoners crack up. Another voice calls out, 41! Sending the prisoners into greater peals of laughter. What's going on? The newbie asks his cellmate. We've been in prison so long we memorized each other's jokes, so rather than we tell the same jokes, we've assigned them numbers. The new prisoner decides to give it a shot and shouts out for all to hear, 18! There's no response, not even a snicker. What happened? He asks. His cellmate shrugs. You just didn't tell it well. Crisis midlife. A couple is sitting in the living room sipping wine. Out of the blue, the wife says, I love you. Is that you or the wine talking? Asks the husband. It's me, says the wife, and I'm talking to the wine. D for doctors. When a rich businessman begins to choke on a fishbone at a restaurant, a doctor seated nearby springs up and performs a Heimlich maneuver, saving the man's life. Thank you, said the businessman. Please, I insist on paying you. Just name the fee. Okay, said the doctor. How about what you would have offered when the bone was still stuck in your throat? Bon appetit, Mr. Heimlich. Picture of a doctor with a glass of wine and a chicken bone. E, eternal life. I intend to live forever. So far, so good. Everything's big in Texas. A blind man visits Texas. This is kind of appropriate for our show, isn't it? When he gets to his hotel, he reels a bed. Wow, this bed is big. Everything's big in Texas, says the bellhop. The man heads downstairs to the bar, settles on a huge bar stool, and orders a beer. A mug is placed between his hands. Wow, these drinks are big. Everything's big in Texas, says the bartender. After downing a few, the blind man asks where the bathroom is. Second door to the right, says the bartender. The blind man heads for the bathroom, but accidentally opens the door that leads to the swimming pool and falls in. Popping his head up from under the water, he flails his arms and shouts, "Don't flush! Don't flush!" F. Food. It would be embarrassing trying to explain what an appetizer is to someone from a starving country. Yeah, the appetizer, that's the food we eat before we have our food. No, you're thinking of dessert. That's the food we have after we have our food. That was from Jim Gaffigan. Funerals. According to most studies, people's number one fear is public speaking. Number two is death. That means to the average person, if you go to a funeral, you're better off in a casket than doing the eulogy. That's from Jerry Seinfeld. Gallows humor for G. First the doctor told me the good news. I was going to have a disease named after me. Steve Martin. H. Heaven. In surgery for a heart attack, a middle-aged woman has a vision of God by her bedside. Will I die, she asks. God says, no, you have 30 more years to live. With 30 years to look forward to, she decides to make the best of it. So, since she's already in the hospital, she gets breast implants, liposuction, tummy tuck, hair transplants, and collagen injections in her lips. She looks fantastic. The day she's discharged, she exits the hospital with a swagger, crosses the street, and is stuck immediately by an ambulance and killed. Up in heaven, she sees God. You said I had 30 more years to live, she complains. That's true, says God. So what happened? God shrugs and says, I just didn't recognize you. K. Knock, knock. Knock, knock. Who's there? A little old lady. A little old lady who? I had no idea you could yodel. Oh, that's terrible. Lawyers for L. A lawyer sent a note to a client. Dear Jim, I thought I saw you on the street the other day. Crossed over to say hello, but it wasn't you, so I went back. 1/10 of an hour, $25. Light bulbs. How many narcissists does it take to change a light bulb? One. He holds the bulb while the world revolves around him. So how many paranoids does it take to change a light bulb? Who wants to know? M. For marriage. A man is arrested for stealing a can of peaches and are brought before the judge. The judge asks, how many peaches were in the can? The man replies, 6, Your Honor. In that case, you will go to jail for 6 days, one for each peach. Hearing that, his wife stands and says, Your Honor, he also stole a can of peas. Military. A drill sergeant chews out one of his cadets. Then he smiled coyly and said, I guess when I die, you'll dance on my grave. The cadet shakes his head. Not me, Sarge. I promised myself that when I got out of the Army, I'd never stand in another line. Musicians. A woman is on trial for beating up her unfaithful rock star husband with his guitar collection. The judge asks her, first offender? No, she said, first a Gibson, then offender. N. New Yorkers. Born and bred in Manhattan, Larry and Jane left the city to buy a cattle ranch in Wyoming. Months later, a friend flew out for a visit. So what did you name the ranch, he asked. At first, we couldn't agree on anything, said the new cowboy. We finally settled on the Double R Lazy L Triple Horseshoe Bar 7 Lucky Diamond Ranch. Wow. His friend was impressed, but looking around, he saw no cattle. So where are all the cows? None of them survived the branding. Don't quite get that one. Nutty Professor. A mathematician wanders around at 3 a.m., and his wife yells, you're late. You said wanders home at 3 a.m., and his wife yells, you're late. You said you'd be home by 11:45. Actually, the mathematician replies, I said I'd be home by 11:45. Oh, God. These make dad jokes look good. Old age. An elderly couple goes to Burger King, where they carefully split a burger and fries. A trucker takes pity on them and offers to buy the wife her own meal. It's all right, says the husband. We share everything. A few minutes later, the trucker notices the wife hasn't taken a bite. I really wouldn't mind buying her own meal, he insists. She'll eat, the husband assures. We share everything. Unconvinced, the trucker asks the wife, why won't you eat? The wife snaps, because I'm waiting for the teeth. P for phones. A woman walks into the doctor's office with both her ears burned. What happened? Asked the doctor. While I was ironing my blouse, the phone rang, and I picked up the iron instead of the phone, he says. That explains one ear, but what about the other? The jerk called again. Politicians. At the turn of the 19th century, a senator gave a speech to Scandinavian settlement in Minnesota. First, he promised lower taxes, and the audience enthusiastically shouted, Tinka, Tinka! Encouraged by the response, he then proposed a better public facilities. Tinka, Tinka! On a roll, he promised to increase their lands by 50%. Tinka, Tinka! Walking away, he told the settlement leader, I guess they love me. The leader shrugged before saying, Hey, watch out. You almost stepped in that big pile of tinka. Puns. I can't believe I got fired from the calendar factory. All I did was take a day off. R. Religion. Louis was shipwrecked and lived alone on a desert island for years until he was finally rescued. Before leaving the island, he gave the rescue party a tour. I built myself a house, and that's it there. There's the barn, and over here is the church I worshipped in, he said. What's that building over there? One of the rescuers asked. Louis sneered. That's the church I used to belong to. S for science. A scientist walked into the pharmacy and says, Give me some prepared tablets of acetylic acid. Do you mean aspirin? Asked the pharmacist. The scientist slapped his forehead. That's it. I can never remember the name. Sex. A sex therapist has a theory that couples who make love once a day are the happiest. So he tests it at a seminar by asking those assembled, How many people here make love once a day? Half the people raise their hands, each of them grinning wildly. Once a week? A third of the audience takes their hands. He grins. Their grins a bit less vibrant. Once a month, a few hands tepidly go up. Then he asks, Okay, how about once a year? Man in back leaps up and down, jubilant, waving his hands. The therapist is shocked. This disproves his theory. And if you make love only once a year, why are you so happy? The man yells, Because today's the day! Therapy for tea. A psychologist congratulated his patient on making good progress. But the patient wasn't buying it. You call this progress, he snapped. 6 months ago I was Napoleon. Now I'm nobody. Toilet humor. Why do they look gonk gas station's bathrooms? Are they afraid someone will clean them? That was George Carlin. That figures that sounds like a George Carlin joke. U. UFOs. Two Martians are watching Earth from the safety of their spaceship. This is interesting, says the first. The biped species on the planet has developed satellite-based nuclear weapons. Are they an emerging intelligence? Asked the second alien. I don't think so. They have them all pointed at themselves. V for vegetarians. Did you hear about the vegan devil worshiper? He sold his soul to Seitan, S-E-I-T-A-N. W. Work. Three guys are fishing when an angel appears. The first guy says, I've suffered from back pain for years. Can you help me? The angel touches the man's back, and he feels instant relief. The second guy points to his thick glasses and begs for a cure to his poor eyesight. When the angel tosses the lenses into the lake, the man gains 20/20 vision. The angel turns to the third fellow. He instantly recoils and screams, Don't touch me! Don't touch me! I'm on disability! X for exercise. The first time I see a jogger smiling, I'll consider it. Yo. Y for yo, mama. Yo mama is so old that when she was young, rainbows were black and white. Woo-woo. Z for zoos. When the zoo gorilla dies, the zookeeper hires a mime to dress up as the gorilla and get into the cage until he finds a replacement ape. The mime quickly discovers what a great gig he has. He can sleep, play, and make fun of people all day, and he's drawing bigger crowds than he ever has. Eventually, the crowd tires of him and starts paying more attention to the lion in the next cage. Miff, the mime, climbs on top of the cage, crosses across the partition, and dangles from the top of the lion's cage, teasing the big cat. The crowd love it, but the lion is furious. That is until the mime slips and falls into his pen. The lion licks his chops and slowly walks toward him. Just as the lion is about to pounce, the terrified mime screams, Help me! With that, the lion leaps on top of the mime, brings his startling maw inches from his face, and says, Shut up! You want to get us both fired? Drama in real life. After a freak backyard accident almost kills her, a Texas woman is taken on a miraculous medical journey. Editor's note. After we published How Is He Still Alive? About a 10-year-old boy who survived a harrowing head injury caused by a skewer, we received a letter from Darna Barber. Barber had her own story to tell, and she assured us was every bit as frightening and perhaps even more miraculous. She may be right. It was a warm April evening, and I had gotten home from work about an hour earlier. As I often did after a long day, I went straight to my backyard and did some work in my flower garden before deciding to light the grill to make dinner for my husband and myself. I had only just walked a few steps into the patio when suddenly I felt a horrifying blow to the right side of my neck. It felt as if someone had hit me with a baseball bat, but I knew that no one was in the yard with me, so no one could have hit me. Totally confused, I reached up into the shock and horror, realized I had been shot with an arrow. I grabbed the arrow in a death grip where it had pierced my neck and ran inside screaming my husband's name. Ed was in the back of the house talking to our daughter Keela on the phone. He dropped the phone and ran to me. Ed grabbed me by the shoulders to stop me from running and told me to lie down on the couch. Then he went to call 911. I lay there and prayed. I didn't know if there was any way I could survive. The next hour or so was crazy. A jumbled mix of events. The arrowhead had come from a young man practicing with a compound bow, used for hunting in his backyard. Lucky he was using a practice arrow, which is smooth and rounded. A broadhead arrow for hunting would have killed me. He lived across the alley and was shooting to the north. The arrow had ricocheted and turned back to the south. It went over two, possibly three fences, through the shrubs of an oak tree, between two large hanging baskets, and into my neck as I walked across the patio. A shot from a compound bow can travel up to 200 miles per hour, or 300 feet per second. We had EMTs who were simply wonderful that evening. As they entered the house and sat down beside me, they were perfectly calm and totally focused. They called for help for the paramedics and for a medical helicopter from Amarillo, Texas, which is about 65 miles away, and the closest city with a trauma center. As the helicopter lifted off to take me to Amarillo, I felt complete peace. I had seen a large number of people outside my house, and I knew that the Lord was being bombarded with prayers on my behalf. I felt certain that everything would be fine. At the hospital, family and friends were gathering. I tried hard to reassure them. I kept telling them I was okay, but the looks on their faces told me that they weren't buying. It was a difficult job since I had an arrow sticking out of my neck. And they got a picture here of an x-ray, first of all, showing where the arrow went into her neck on the right side, and the scan showing the arrow penetrating her neck. And then they also show her sitting in a chair. She's a blonde. Looks very comfortable. She's got a glass of something in her thing. She's back in her backyard again. Soon they took me back for a CT scan to determine the location of the arrow on the inside. The doctors and nurses began telling me how lucky I was. The arrow had gone between the carotid artery and the jugular vein. That space between the two is a quarter of an inch or less. The diameter of the arrow is larger than the space it went through. It actually pushed the artery to the side without nicking it. There was no bleeding at all. Although I didn't realize at the time how truly incredible this was, I began arguing with them that I wasn't lucky, I was blessed. This is an argument I have continued to wage ever since. As I was taken back to surgery to remove the arrow, my family entered a waiting room full of people. In fact, there were two waiting rooms full. Someone told my son Kyle that there was a post on the site, TexasBowhunter.com, asking for prayers for me. It turns out a friend had called her son, who is a bow hunter, and told him about the accident, and he had posted a prayer request on that website. The morning after my two-hour surgery, with my family all gathered in my room, a couple of doctors came by to see me. After they left, the surgeon came in. He checked the wound and talked to us about what he had done. Then he told us something that rocked our world again. He said the CT scanner revealed that I had a brain tumor. I remember going a bit numb, but thinking God works in mysterious ways. The surgeon said they were almost certain the tumor was benign, but it was located in a very difficult place. I was stunned, of course, but I felt like it was God's plan for me to find it. A few days later, I went in for a second opinion from another neurosurgeon. He said it was a difficult surgery, but it had to be done. The tumor was about to cross the middle of my midline of my brain, which would have resulted in a massive stroke. The brain surgery was successful, and in less than a week, I was back home. I was discouraged and feeling horrible. I had lost a lot of blood from bacterial infection, Clostridium difficile, and was extremely anemic and weak. I was beginning to have symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, hearing the swish and then the thunk of the arrow. Thankfully, that didn't last too long. All my adventures had taken a toll, and I needed a time of healing and rest. All was uneventful for a couple of years. I continued to tell people that I was not lucky, I was blessed. I had an MRI each year to make sure that the tumor was not growing back. But in 2015, after I had my MRI, the doctor's office called and told me that I needed to come back in to see them. The doctor explained that there was still no sign of the tumor, but they had found a brain aneurysm. Normally, aneurysms aren't discovered until they rupture, and that is almost always too late. Again, I was facing uncertainty and dreading brain surgery. I simply did not know how people go through times like these without the Lord and the peace that comes in knowing that God is in control. In the weeks before the surgery, I felt at peace with whatever outcome would be. We went to Dallas for the procedure. They found it was a very fragile and difficult aneurysm, covered with blisters and on the verge of rupturing, but the doctor successfully clipped it. Had it not been for that arrow, I would have died from a brain tumor, a stroke, or an aneurysm, and honestly, the arrow should have killed me, but it didn't. For weeks and weeks, everyone gathered around me when I went to the grocery store or the post office. People would stop and hug me and even cry, saying how happy they were that this had happened. It strengthened everyone's faith. Coincidence? Luck? I think not. The gentleman who wrote the last comment of the prayer request thread on the TexasBowhunter.com summed it up in just two words. He simply wrote, "Amazing Grace." Do we really need sun protection? This is Health and Medicine. For years, we've been told to stay out of the sun and use sunscreen. Those guidelines may only be unnecessary. They can also be harming our overall health. And there's a picture of somebody squeezing a thing of scrum cream on their hands. These are dark days for supplements. Although they are $30 billion plus market in the United States alone, some of them, such as vitamin A, selenium, glucosamine, chronodroitin, and fish oil, have now flopped in study after study. If there was one supplement that seemed to sure to survive their rigorous test, it was vitamin D. People with low levels of vitamin D in their blood have significantly higher rates of virtually every disease you can think of. Cancer, diabetes, obesity, osteoporosis, heart attack, stroke, depression, cognitive impairment, autoimmune conditions, and more vitamin D deficiency is even suspected of being a factor in severe COVID-19 cases. Health experts believe that the most of us aren't getting enough of this essential vitamin. Vitamin D is a hormone manufactured by the skin with the help of sunlight. It's difficult to obtain in sufficient quantities through diet. When our ancestors lived outdoors in tropical regions and ran around half naked, this wasn't a problem. They produced all the vitamin D they needed from the sun. But today, 90% of us spend about 22 hours indoors every day. Actually, according to EPA research, and we do go outside, we've been taught to slather on sunscreen to protect ourselves from dangerous UV rays, which can cause skin cancer. Sunscreen can reduce our natural production of vitamin D, so we've been told to compensate with vitamin D pills. Yet vitamin D supplementation has failed in clinical trials. One of the largest trials ever conducted, in which 25,871 participants received high doses for 5 years, found no impact on cancer, heart disease, or stroke. How do we get so wrong? How could people with low vitamin D levels clearly suffer higher rates of so many diseases and not be helped by supplementation? A rogue band of researchers argued that what made people right with high vitamin D levels so healthy was not the vitamin itself. That was just a marker. Their vitamin D levels were high because they were getting plenty of exposure to the thing that really responsible for their good health, that big orange ball shining down from above. One of these researchers is a mild-mannered dermatologist at the University of Edinburgh named Richard Weller, M.D. For years, Dr. Weller swallowed the line about the destructive nature of the sun's rays. "I'm not by nature a rebel," he insists. "I was always for the good boy who towed the line at school. The pathway is one which came from following the data rather than a desire to overturn apple carts." And there's this in the middle of this article, there's a picture of a bunch of young ladies, look like they're teenagers, maybe slightly older, floating down a river, a lazy river, in inner tubes. That looks like fun. But 10 years ago, Dr. Weller was researching nitric oxide, a molecule produced in the body that After 10 years ago, Dr. Weller was researching nitric oxide. Sorry about that. Doesn't happen often, but it does. A molecule produced in the body that dilates blood vessels and lowers blood pressure. He discovered a previously unknown biological mechanism by which the skin uses sunlight to make nitric oxide. It was already suspected that rates of high blood pressure, heart disease, stroke, and overall mortality all rise the farther you get from the sunny equator. And they all rise in the darker months. Dr. Weller put two and two together and had what he calls a eureka moment. Could exposing skin to sunlight lower blood pressure? Sure enough, when he exposed volunteers to the equivalent of 30 minutes of summer sunlight without sunscreen, their nitric oxide levels went up and their blood pressure went down. Because of connection to the heart disease and strokes, high blood pressure is a leading cause of death in the world, and a reduction was of magnitude large enough to prevent millions of deaths on a global level. Wouldn't all those rays also raise the rate of skin cancer? Yes, but skin cancer kills surprisingly few people, fewer than 3 per 100,000 in the United States each year. For every person who dies of skin cancer, about 80 die from cardiovascular diseases. People don't realize this because the several different diseases are lumped together under the term skin cancer. The most common, by far, are basal cell carcinoma, which I have had, a squamous cell carcinomas, which are almost never fatal. In fact, Dr. Weller says, when I diagnose a basal cell skin cancer in a patient, the first thing I say is congratulations, because you're walking out of my office with a longer life expectancy than when you walked in. That's probably because people who get carcinomas, which are strongly linked to sun exposure, tend to be healthy types who are outside getting plenty of exercise and sunlight. Melanoma, the deadly type of skin cancer, is much rarer, according to only 1 to 3% of new skin cancers. And perplexingly, outdoor workers report lower rates of melanoma than indoor workers. The risk factor for melanoma appears to be intermittent sunshine and sunburn, especially when you're young, says Dr. Weller. But there's evidence that long-term sun exposure associates with less melanoma. These are pretty radical words in the establishment of dermatological community. We do know that melanoma is deadly, says Yale University's David Leffel, M.D., one of the leading dermatologists in the country. And we know that the vast majority of cases are due to sun exposure. So certainly people need to be cautious. Still, Dr. Weller kept finding evidence that didn't fit the official stay out of the sun story. Some of the best came from Pelle Lindqvist, Ph.D., a senior researcher fellow in obstetrics and gynecology at Sweden's Karolinska Institute. Lindqvist tracked the sunbathing habits of nearly 30,000 women in Sweden over 20 years. Originally, he was studying blood clots, which he found occurred less frequently in women who spent more time in the sun, and less frequently during the summer. Lindqvist also looked at type 2 diabetes. Sure enough, the sun worshippers had much lower rates. Melanoma? True. Those with more sun exposure had a higher risk of it, but they were 8 times less likely to die from it. So Lindqvist decided to look at overall mortality rates, and the results were shocking. Over the 20 years of the study, sun avoiders were twice as likely to die as ardent sunbathers. There are not many daily lifestyle choices that double your risk of dying. In a 2016 study published in the Journal of Internal Medicine, Lindqvist's team put it in perspective. Avoidance of sun exposure is a risk factor of a similar magnitude as smoking in terms of life expectancy. For Dr. Weller's largest study, published in February 2020, his team tracked the blood pressure of 340,000 people in 2,000 spots around the United States, adjusting for variables such as age and skin type. The results clearly showed that the reason people in summer climes have lower blood pressure is as simple as light hitting the skin. When I spoke with Dr. Weller, I made the mistake of characterizing this notion as counterintuitive. It's entirely intuitive, he responds. Homo sapiens has been around for 200,000 plus years. Until the Industrial Revolution, we lived outside. How do we get through the Neolithic era without sunscreen? Actually, perfectly well. That's what's counterintuitive is the dermatologists run around saying, don't go outside, you might die. When you spend much of your day treating patients with terrible melanomas, it's a natural to focus on preventing them. But the big picture reveals the limitations of that thinking and keeps getting more interesting. Vitamin D now looks like the tip of the solar iceberg. Sunlight triggers the release of a number of other important chemicals in the body, such as serotonin and endorphins. It reduces the risk of prostate, breast, colorectal, and pancreatic cancers. It improves circadian rhythms. It reduces inflammation and dampens autoimmune responses. It improves virtually every mental condition you can think of. And it's free! These seem likely benefits everyone should be able to take advantage of. but not all people process sunlight the same way. People with darker skin need higher doses of sun to get its health bonuses, but they too are getting the opposite message. Every year, Dr. Weller spends time working in Skin Hospital in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Not only is Addis Ababa near the equator, but it also hits 7,500 feet above sea level, so it receives massive UV radiation. Despite that, Dr. Weller says, I have not seen skin cancer. Yet people of African descent in Britain and America are toyed to avoid the sun. All early humans evolved beneath the tropical sun. Like air, water, and food, sunlight was one of our key inputs. Humans also evolved a way to protect our skin from receiving too much radiation. Melanin, a naturally sunscreen. Our dark-skinned African ancestors produced so much melanin that they never had to worry about the sun. People of color rarely get melanoma. In the United States, the rate is 26 per 100,000 in Caucasians, 5 per 100,000 in Hispanics, and 1 per 100,000 in African Americans. On the rare occasions when African Americans do get melanoma, it's particularly lethal, but it's usually a kind that occurs in the palms, on the soles of the feet, or under the nails, and is not caused by sun exposure. At the same time, African Americans suffered high rates of diabetes, heart disease, stroke, internal cancers, and other diseases that seem to improve in the presence of sunlight, of which they may well be not getting enough. Because of their genetically higher levels of melanin, they require more exposure to produce compounds such as vitamin D, and they are less able to store that vitamin for shorter and cloudier days. They have much to gain from the sun and less to fear. Dr. Leffel puts the differences this way. While it is true that people with olive skin are at less risk, we do see an increasing number of people of that type of skin getting skin cancer. But skin cancer is rare in African Americans, and although they represent a spectrum of pigmentation, they are not as much at risk. And yet they and other people of color are getting a very different story, misled into believing in aggressive sun protection. On its website, the American Academy of Dermatology recommends that everyone, regardless of skin tone, protect themselves from the sun's harmful ultraviolet rays by seeking shade, wearing protective clothing, and using broad-spectrum water-resistant sunscreen with an SPF of 30 or higher. Dr. Weller finds that exasperating. The cosmetic industry is now trying to push sunscreen at dark-skinned people, he says. This is a marketing ploy. Many experts in the rest of the world have already come around to the benefits of sunlight. Sunny Australia changed its tune back in 2005 when the UV index is below 3, which is true for most of the continental United States in the winter. Australian official advice states, sun protection isn't recommended unless you are outdoors for an extended period or near reflective surfaces like snow. To support vitamin D production, you spend some time outdoors in the middle of the day with skin uncovered. New Zealand signed on to similar recommendations, and the British Association of Dermatologists went even further. Enjoying the sun safely while taking care not to burn can help to provide the benefits of vitamin D without unduly raising the risk of skin cancer. Dr. Leffel recommends a sensible approach. I have always advised my patients that they don't need to crawl under a rock, but choose common sense and be conscious of cumulative sun exposure and sunburn in particular, he told me. This does not mean cultivating a burnished tan. All the experts agree that sunburns, especially those suffered during childhood and adolescence, are particularly bad. Ultimately, it's your call. Each person needs vary so much with the season, latitude, skin color, personal history, and philosophy, so much else that it's impossible to provide one-size-fits-all recommendation. As for me, I've made my choice. A world of healthy outdoor adventure beckons. If not naked, then reasonably close. Starting today, I'm stepping into the light. How much sun do you need? It doesn't take much exposure to reach its health benefit. For most people, 10 to 30 minutes outdoors without sunscreen several times a week should do it. The darker your skin tone, the farther you live from the equator, the more time you need. Conversely, the more skin you expose to sun, the less time you'll need. But keep an eye on the UV index. CEPA.gov/sunsafety/UV-index-1. It's an estimate of the amount of UV radiation you'll be exposed to in your zip code. I calculated data by the National Weather Service. You're generally fine when the index is 2 or below. When it hits 3, or if you are planning to be outdoors for more than 30 minutes, wear a hat or other covering or sunscreen. People who are sensitive to UV rays should use protection more often. Why did Yankee Doodle call a feather macaroni? Back in 1760s, macaroni was slang for the stylish young men who frequently a fashionable new English hangout, the Macaroni Club, named after a popular food that had just made its way there from Italy. So when a Yankee Doodle stuck a feather in his cap and called it macaroni, he was identifying himself as a bit of a dandy, essentially the hipster of his time. In praise of guilty pleasures, go ahead and binge-watch some more reality TV or lowbrow indulgences aren't so bad for us after all. We all have them. TV shows and movies we love, even though we just know they're bad. Trashy books we simply can't put down. Awful earworms we hate to love. These are our guilty pleasures, which you might call the junk food in our media diets. Because it's often used in a winking way, the term guilty pleasure feels like a joke we're proving we're in on. But if that joke is about something that brings us genuine joy and isn't harming anyone, then what's the punchline? Shouldn't we be free to enjoy whatever we like? A guilty pleasure is something that we enjoy, but we know we're neither not supposed to like it or that liking it says something negative about us, says Sammy Schock, Ph.D., an associate professor of gender and women's studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Considering what separates some major TV events from others, the idea of apologizing for watching the Oscars or the NBA finale sounds silly, so why is the Bachelor finale different? Researchers show that our so-called guilty pleasures can actually be good for us. So how do we get to the point where we can let ourselves enjoy what we enjoy? Beyond the fear about how others will perceive us, we tend to grapple with a perfectionism that stems from deeply puritanical roots of our culture, one in which pleasure is seen as sinful and bad and self-indulgent, says Schock. At the very least, we have to earn it. How often do we say things to ourselves such as, I've been good all week, so I deserve some ice cream, or I walked this morning, so I'm going to veg out tonight. But all this guilt goes against our human nature. There's a reason why our bodies, literally at the nerve level, are wired to feel pleasure, says Adrienne Maury Brown, author of Pleasure Activism, The Politics of Feeling Good. For her, pleasure activism, spreading the message that we deserve to enjoy ourselves, is about combating the oppressive plea that pleasure isn't a natural part of life, or that only certain people deserve to enjoy themselves. She suggests asking, why do I feel so much shame around this if it's not causing harm to me or anyone else? After all, binge-watching 7 episodes of The Real Housewives or wasting the afternoon watching back-to-back classic baseball games isn't going to melt our brains. In fact, studies suggest that playing a video game or watching a movie or television show can restore some psychological resources, says Robin Nabi, Ph.D., a professor of communication at the University of California, Santa Barbara, who specializes in the effect of media on emotions. Though the benefits have yet to be studied long-term, and our problems don't magically disappear once we turn off the tube, rest can reduce stress level. Perhaps more important, Nabi says, your perception of your ability to handle it improves. Giving ourselves permission to enjoy some downtime is also a key part of self-compassion, which helps combat anxiety and depression. When we rest, we think we're supposed to use that time productively, says Kristen Neff, Ph.D., an associate professor in the Department of Education Psychology at the University of Texas at Austin. While that may be good for survival, she points out, constantly running through hypothetical problems is not very good for happiness. Taking a mental break and enjoying something that doesn't require intense intellectual focus gets us out of our problem-solving mode, says Nabi. That is healthy for us on many levels. Flow states, such as meditating, playing sports, and yes, consuming media, can help our brains rest and recover by providing a reprieve from problem-solving mode. Such breaks can also improve our ability to deal with stress and recharge our batteries, so to speak. We have this cultural value of media consumption being edifying, and what we do should we do about growing and achieving, says Nabi. We don't focus as much on relaxation and playing and enjoyment and fun. These are such important aspects of being a human being. And feeling guilty about activities we enjoy or disparage them can detract from the benefits they offer us. For one thing, if we stigmatize a behavior and then engage in it, it's easy to go overboard, which can leave us feeling guilty and less satisfied. In one study, dieters who had been coached in self-compassion were less likely to overeat after consuming unhealthy food, while those who simply followed restrictive diets were harsher on themselves. While guilt can sometimes be a healthy motivator to push us to change behaviors we don't like, its counterpart, shame, The painful feeling that our behavior makes us horrible people is never productive. When we disparage our TV viewing habits, for example, we typically aren't describing a behavior we hope to change, so the negative feelings aren't particularly productive or helpful. Brown reminds us that it's normal to and even healthy to embrace our need for pleasure. She adds one caveat, though, a reminder that too much of a good thing is never a good thing, which is why understanding and accepting what brings us pleasure is crucial to finding a right balance. Shedding our self-imposed embarrassment about our interests can be empowering, which is why it's time to ditch the term guilty pleasure from our collective vocabulary. One big reason to do so is that talking about our common interests and pursuits, whatever they may be, is a way to connect with others. The most important value of a guilty pleasure might just be the bond it can create between people who share it. You never find those connections if you don't speak up. Stop apologizing. Talk about your pastimes. You might just find that it alleviates any residual guilt and makes it easier to discover more things you enjoy. Lots of time, guilty pleasures get talked about in terms of genre, says Schock, but it can help to think about what you like specifically. She points out you probably don't like all boy bands, but what about is that particular group and their music? Whatever it is, find your little niche and go for that. And don't be ashamed of what that is, because it's clearly doing something for you. When spell check can't save you. Hummus is a Middle Eastern dip made from mashed chickpeas. Humus is decaying organic matter in soil. You will find 50 varieties of this former at your local Whole Foods. Be careful to eat, never to eat the latter. Creepy things your smartphone knows about you. With passcodes, passwords, and location tracking, smartphone collects hordes of data on users. Here's what you know about everything they know. Hint, it might be time to change some privacy settings. Every place you've ever been. Both Androids and iPhones have internal tracking devices that can see your location at any given point. Hidden in the settings of iPhones and Android lies location services. If yours is switched on, your phone is likely to build up a long, long list of places you've been. The fifth feature does use up a lot of battery life, so many users have turned it off. However, some apps, like Uber or Airbnb, turn it on when you authorize them. And all this information your smartphone knows about you is helpful to hackers. Everything you told Siri. Apple collects data from Siri to understand you better and recognize what you say, according to the software license agreement. This can track anything from the way you pronounce words to the trends in Siri searches. However, the information Siri learns is connected to your phone with a random ID instead of your Apple account to ensure anonymity. Your personal IDs. The China-based Android smartphone company OnePlus was found using personal identification information like device passcodes from its users. They explained themselves, saying that they used the info to improve the user experience and thankfully rolled back the privacy breach. But they shouldn't have been invading user privacies, especially when it comes to such sensitive information. After the Facebook and Cambridge Analytica scandal, it makes you wonder if other tech firms are hiding things from their users. Oh, and if you're still uncomfortable about Facebook creepily accurate advertisements, there is a way to turn them off, but I'm not going to go into that. Your passwords. Have you ever logged into an app or website on your smartphone, and when prompted to save your password, you've answered yes? We've all been there. It's convenient and easy for the sites we visit to remember our information and save us the time it takes to log in. However, do you really want Google, your smartphone, and some of those sketchy websites storing your information? Maybe not. Try the old-fashioned way. Just write down your passwords in a computer doc, or even better, with paper and pen. Just don't lose it. Every message you send. If you're an iPhone user that deletes texting messages from conversation, there's a surprise. Those conversations are probably still around. Apple keeps messages in an encrypted form for a limited period of time before they actually get deleted, just to ensure that they get delivered and read properly. The only thing is, Apple didn't disclose how long a limited period of time is. Maybe it's 5 minutes. Maybe it's years. All the information you've given to Google. Androids are powered by Google apps. Think Chrome, Play Store, Gmail, etc. As soon as you sign into your Android with your Google login, your phone is linked to all of your other Google accounts. Once you've logged in, your phone has access to everything Google does, including the length and type of your phone calls, your device, where you are, and more. how fast you're traveling. Have you ever received an iPhone notification that said, it will take you X number of minutes to get to wherever you're going? Creepy, right? This goes along with location services. Not only does your iPhone track your location, but it also takes down the time you arrive and leave. So it does the math at how long it takes to get places, and then it sends those notifications when it notices a trend. If that's more creepy than convenient to you, turn your location services off in the settings. Just make sure the apps you're using, like Uber or Facebook, have locations turned off as well. And all the information you've given to your apps. There are a slew of apps that cater to both Android and iPhone devices that track hefty amounts of data from their users. If you go into your smartphone settings, you'll be able to control the amount of information these apps receive. However, some apps, like Facebook, require you to control your settings within the app. Be aware, sometimes when you change these settings, the accessibility of the app decreases. For example, if you turn location services off on Facebook, you will not be able to use the check-in feature on the app. As if these things weren't scary enough, your phone is only one of several things in your home that could be spying on you. And one last item, the paint color that gives back. A report by Zillow looked at 135,000 photos from old houses across the country to see how paint colors impact sales. They found that homes with charcoal, smoky, or jet black doors sell for $6,271 more than expected. Considering the door paint job can cost approximately $100 to $400, a bucket of black paint is a stellar investment. In their study, Zillow also found that tuxedo kitchens, where upper and lower cabinets are two different colors, sell for more money, too. It may be worth it to stage your home with a few of these features. Well, we have just about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. We're going to have to cut off a little quick here, so you're going to hear music for about 30 seconds at the end of this. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And don't forget, that's also a way to pick up on what you missed if you have access to a computer. It gives the date and the time that the program was played. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.